We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime. Well,
thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Hello, I'm Cleta Mitchell. Welcome to our podcast, Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. This is a podcast that's produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute for our Election Integrity Network. We talk about everything having to do with elections, how elections are supposed to be run, how sometimes they're not run the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do about saving and reclaiming our election system. And so today, we're very blessed to have with us a gentleman who has devoted an enormous amount of his time and expertise over the last at least 2 years, maybe longer, to really understanding the election systems, voting systems, and software. And he's going to try to translate that for us into English, Patrick Kolbeck. Thank you so much, Pat, for being with us. We really appreciate your time.
I appreciate the opportunity. I mean, this is something that I've been in evangelism mode on for a long time, so anytime we have an opportunity to get the word out, it's great.
So, Pat, tell us a little bit about you, about where you grew up, your education, and what's a nice guy like you doing in the election integrity business?
It's one heck of a journey. I mean, I was born and raised in Michigan, but I spent a lot of time working on the space program outside of the state.
So where?
In Huntsville, Alabama.
No kidding.
And that was my first exposure to what are called critical infrastructure components, because I worked on the life support system. And astronauts tended to think of those life support systems as critical infrastructure components.
I think so. Right. You're going into space, that would definitely be critical.
Yeah, I didn't realize at the time that I'd be looking at another critical infrastructure component called our elections. But the discipline that I learned as an engineer with Boeing on that program, I think has helped me along to address some of the stuff that's happening today. But after that, I ended up working for the Department of Defense for a while as a contractor. We worked on virtual reality training systems for the military. And then I came back to Michigan, my wife and I have been here for the last 25 years or so. And I ended up running, I was a consultant for quite a few years when I got back. But then I ended up getting the call to run for office.
Oh, really?
I served as a state senator. I didn't know any better. I didn't know there was a pecking order. So I said, I had a good friend of mine running for state representative, and the state senate slot, there wasn't any really good candidate there. So I said, I had sat on the coffee hour, so the guy who's going to be running for this seat on the other side of the political aisle. And the guy lied to me twice during because I had done my research before. And I said, I don't want anybody like that representing me up in Lansing. So my wife and I went back, prayed about it, and I gave God a deadline. I said, February 21st, God, you know how to get through this thick Polish noggin here. You got to let me know, am I going to be running for office as an engineer? Talk about an a square peg in a round hole. And sure enough, on February 21st, my devotion for that day was from 1 Corinthians 9:24, which reads, "For many run in the race, but only one gets the prize, or on such a way as to get the prize." And that's what I did. That kept me going, and we just knocked and knocked on doors. I didn't have any money. We liquidated all our retirement savings to run for office, and we were all in. And through it all, where God guides, He provides, and I became the first person elected directly in the state senate in over 3 decades without any previous political experience. And
oh my goodness, is that right?
Yep. And so
30 years?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I served 2 years, two terms when I was in there. I was on the Senate leadership team my first term, and it was instrumental in leading the passage of Right to Work here in Michigan. So that was
I remember when that happened.
Yeah, and I'm the one Republican senator from Wayne County, the birthplace of the UAW, but we were able to make the point that this was actually pro-worker and not anti-worker, as the union management was pitching, and it was a matter of freedom. We were restoring their fundamental freedom of assembly, and I'll tell you, it had huge impact on the state, and it just gave me a little bit of fearlessness when it comes to taking on some tough issues, mm-hmm. because the more you kind of step out into the water, the more God seems to give you. And when I got out of the Michigan Senate, I didn't go the normal route where they go get a job with a lobbyist firm, or you go off and try to find your way in the administration. I didn't do that. I ended up picking up the helm of a nonprofit that I'd started called the Michigan Armed Forces Hospitality Center. We call it the Michigan Freedom Center. And so it's essentially a way center, a waypoint for military families and whenever they're on their travels. And we just take good care of them and give them the love and respect that they deserve, and a safe place to camp out. And but I stepped down from my job as CEO and over the Michigan Armed Forces Hospitality Center in July, right before the election, because I saw the storm clouds brewing around
really?
The elections.
So yeah. You stepped down in July of 2020.
Yeah, and I said, we're going to dedicate full time to getting the truth out. And that's when I started a website, letsfixstuff.org, because at the
and
time.
And that is your website, yep. letsfixstuff.org.
Yep, good engineering title, right? I couldn't afford .com at the time, or else it would have been .com, but now I got both of them. But that's what we set out to do. Originally, we're focusing on getting the truth out about COVID, because my wife's a pediatrician. Mm-hmm. But later it became evident that that was the only way we were going to get out the truth about what really happened in the 2020 election.
So what kind of engineering?
I'm an aerospace engineer.
Aerospace yep. engineering.
I used to teach out at space camp when I was out at Boeing. I was the warm-up act for one of the real rocket scientists out there, one of Dr. Werner Braun Braun's team members.
And, wow.
That was a lot of fun. That was my fun job, serving in the Michigan Senate for 8 years. Not my fun job, but anyway, it's got a plan.
But that actually gives you such a good insight to how the laws are made and
yeah.
And how things work or don't work.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
So, all right. So you said in July of 2020, I have to work on this. What did you see? What did you see coming?
Back in that time frame, we were working with the Thomas More Law Society, so Phil Klein and his group.
Mm-hmm.
And I had set up an organization called the Election Integrity Fund. I said, we got to get poll challengers out to the polls every year. In particular in Detroit, there's never any oversight of mm-hmm. what actually happens,
no.
at least not any pervasive oversight. Well, we were determined to change that. And so I helped form that organization.
And what was it called, the Election Integrity Fund?
A fund, and now it's the Election Integrity Force and Fund, because now they're actually putting boots on the ground, doing studies. There's some really good analyses. And actually, one of the big stories that came out of the 2020 election is that meddling kids sprouted up all over the state and different grassroots organizations. And as somebody who initially got my start in politics through the Tea Party, it's kind of like that a lot. There's a lot of people that said, I'm about to lose my country. I got to do something about it, and we got to get engaged. And there's a lot of different groups that have been formed.
Which I love.
Yeah, and it's encouraging. And so that's kind of where we got our start. We teed that up and started creating certified poll challengers. And actually, I was certified by the EIF as a poll challenger out at the TCS Center on November 3rd through November 4th, 2020.
So you were there on election night.
Yep, I was there, and as I was saying, I had a little bit of PTSD coming driving past that on the way here for this interview, but it was a crazy time. And so I was there when they put the pizza boxes up on the windows.
So that you couldn't see.
Right, and by the way, what really cheeses me off about that is that's when they chose to count the military ballots. They could have counted them 12 hours prior to that. They had people twiddling their thumbs. They chose the time when there were only about a dozen Republican poll challengers covering 134 AV counting boards and 25 tabulators and 12 adjudicator workstations. They chose that time to count the military ballots, and that's important because they transpose the military ballots. They copy them from a military format, which is kind of ad hoc, mm-hmm. to a format that can be scanned by the tabulators. And if you don't have a Republican and a Democrat overseeing that process, mm-hmm. what are the odds that somebody with Trump derangement syndrome is going to fill in that oval on the military ballot the way it was cast? Not very good.
You know, it's interesting you would say that, because I was in Georgia after the election. I was sent there the day after the election by Mark Meadows just to go down there and go to Atlanta to see what was going on. And one of the things, we had so many things that we had to do, but one of the things that kept coming back was military ballots coming in 95% for Biden.
Yeah.
I kept saying, That can't be true. That's not true.
Same thing in Detroit. Same exact thing. And it doesn't make any sense at all. And that's not something you can see necessarily for me on the ground. As far as seeing the big picture, if you're out dedicated to the poll challenger, you're zeroing in on one particular precinct. So you don't, I mean, there's 503 precincts in Detroit. So you don't necessarily see that big picture on it.
It's like a pointless painting.
Yeah.
You can't really see it until you're stepping way back from it.
Yeah, but we did see some instances of things that were definitely pretty smelly on the, it was pretty easy to identify, like the late night drops of ballots at 3:30 in the morning. I was there. I saw that panel van. A lot of people seen the Gateway Pundit video on that. I was actually there witnessing what was going on when they were dragging out these mail bins of non-chain of custody ballots after the polls were closed. They're not supposed to be counted. And then I was also crawling around on the floor chasing Cat 5 cables because I'm also a certified Microsoft small business specialist. So I've set up a few networks in my life, and every single one of those tabulators and every single one of those adjudicators were connected to the internet during tabulation.
Even though they say they're not supposed to
be. And even though three Detroit election officials, including a former state elections director, told me to my face, no, they're not connected to the internet. And I'll tell you, they got the little icon in the bottom right-hand corner. Not only were they the hardwired together to connect, but they had a little icon that indicates internet connection. And I actually asked one of the Detroit election officials, just roll your mouse cursor over that, and it's going to pop up on the screen saying connected to the internet. He refused to do it and said, you're just going to have to trust me. Well, I don't trust them. I don't trust them to this day, and we're going to hold them accountable.
But tell me what happened. It's July of 2020. I want to go back to July of 2020.
Oh, yeah.
What did you see? You started working
COVID on rules, number one.
You saw the okay.
COVID
Talk
rules.
About that. Talk about that.
So we had, and it wasn't necessarily in July that this one came out, but previous to that, they were encouraging the mass mailing of ballots.
Correct. Okay. Oh,
right?
Got
so
it.
They
oh,
had
right.
All these lawsuits, some filed by Priorities USA, which, by the way, on the board of that is Mark Elias, who's Hillary Clinton's lawyer.
Yeah.
Right? Priorities USA is a progressive organization. They filed a lawsuit against a progressive Michigan Secretary of State, Jocelyn
Benson. Who said, okay, I agree with you.
Yeah, that's called lawfare, right? They're just playing games with the legal system. They know we got a Republican House and Senate, and ostensibly they're not going to allow any bad
legislation
policy to get through. So they go around the legislature and go through the judicial system. And that's exactly right. What they did is Jocelyn Benson says, you know, you're right. Voters are really suppressed in this state. We got to do something about it. And you know what? We're not going to suppress any of them anymore because we're going to ignore signature verification.
Right. That happened in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
It happened in Georgia.
Everything,
it happened in Arizona.
There is a national push. And in the wake of the 2018 ballot proposals that came out of Michigan, a lot of money came in from out of state to push a national agenda for no reason absentee voting, same day voter registration, all this bad stuff that it's obvious that this is coordinated at a much higher level
absolutely.
Than individual
and
states.
Well funded. And
extremely.
Very well funded.
Right.
Billionaires.
Absolutely. I look at, you know, I've been doing a lot of research on this. Obviously, we went into the book on this before, but it's amazing the billions of dollars that went into these organizations. And as somebody who came from management consulting background, I know how much resources go into the planning of some of the simulations that they ran, and it's just amazing. We're like in a Pee Wee hockey league compared
true.
To NHL All-Stars.
That's exactly right.
And
they've been doing it for more than a decade.
I know, and we've been, I mean, I'm about as plugged in as you can get into grassroots activities in our state and in with the Republican Party, and I'm telling you,
we don't
have anything close to what these guys are doing.
No clue.
And I kind of came to the conclusion, there's a fundamental difference in the way we operate. Number one, conservatives like myself and yourself, we go through our lives trying to stay as far away from government as possible and making it as inconsequential in our lives as possible. We have to recognize one of these days that there are people on the other side of that equation that are working 24/7, 365 to make government as consequential as
and
possible.
Control all of us.
Yeah, it's all about control.
They've loved all the COVID rules.
Right. So if we step out, we leave a vacuum, and they're more than willing to fill it.
Well, that's what happened in my research. One of the things, and I've been involved. I'm an election lawyer, and I've been involved in law and politics and policy, and particularly in the what I call the the business and regulation of politics, which is the area, that's the area I practiced in for decades.
That's a rare, you know, specialization, because we can't find more than five lawyers in the whole state that'll take on this type of stuff.
Well, and now then that what they want to do is they the left wants to make those of us who have been engaged in this, they want us to all be disbarred so that the few of us that there are, that we won't be able to step off the sidelines and do what we know how to do. But one of the things that has always, I've always said for years, conservatives are all about the substantive rule, the substantive subject matter.
Yeah.
Education, the school choice, taxation, you know, business regulation, all those substantive issues. The left is all about process. I'm sure in the legislature, they write all the rules of political engagement. We're not the ones who are having the campaign finance rules and the election law. That's all left wing. And so, and they began, I realize now, they began to build this infrastructure to support and sustain an election system to take place outside the election system established under law.
Yes.
So that they turbo vote, ballot scout, Senate for Civic Design to draft the design ballots, CTCL.
Eric.
I mean, all of those, just a plethora of organizations, well funded by the left, billionaires.
Web. I mean, I never got an appreciation for how deep the deep state really is until you start investigating that.
And so they built all this. Then they came in, oh, we've got to have all this mail voting. And I do think we have a massive job on our hands to explain to people why every vote should be cast. You know, I've talked about this.
Yeah.
Supervised by election officials and observers.
Yeah.
Now you have another, but what you're focused on and what you've really done is, and I want you to talk to people in English about translate
for
translate for people what you have seen and you have documented. And I have a copy of your, well, you'd written another book, we'll talk about that in a moment, but you've just literally just published this book,
the
2020 coup, and tell us what that's about, what happened, what we can do. I'm all about telling people what they can do. It's one thing to know what happened. Yeah. It's another thing to say, okay, what do we do about it? So tell us about what you saw, what you've identified, and what we can do.
Well, this started with the evidence that started being gathered on November 3rd.
In Michigan.
And I zero in on Michigan only because I was here. I've got the evidence coming in. But actually, I've gotten people sharing evidence from not just all over the country, but all over the world.
Really? I mean, that's interesting.
There's people from UK, from Bulgaria, from all over the place. They're concerned about America because if America goes down, they're not far behind.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I started collecting all this information and evidence, and I determined that, you know, it's not good enough just to collect the evidence, because it was like drinking from a fire hose, especially the first few days afterwards.
Yeah.
And I'm just one guy, and I was trying to disseminate and put all the information into something that made sense. And so back when I worked for the Joint Program Office in the military, we developed something called a CONOPS. It's a concept of operation. So essentially, if you were going to steal an election in this case, how would you go about stealing it? And I had a little bit of an inside track on understanding what could be done, because when I served in the Michigan Senate, I served as a vice chair of the Election and Government Reform Committee, and I took that role very seriously. And as an engineer, one of the first things that I did is I took our Michigan Elections Manual, all of our statutes, sat down with my clerks, and I mapped out all the election processes. So you were talking about the progressives being focused on process. Well, I got really focused on our process
well,
and I wanted to map out everything from voter registration to recounts and certification votes. So I had a pretty good understanding of that, and that served as a basis for an analysis of where are the vulnerabilities. And I put together a little process map that said, all right, here's, if you're going to go off and drill into something, this is where you take it out. And I just took it from an engineering perspective and tried to understand where all those vulnerabilities are.
The vulnerabilities at each step of the process.
Yes.
And what did you conclude?
Well, I broke it down into four basic phases is what it came down to. And all the evidence I mapped into that construct of four basic phases. The first, and by the way, the reason why it's important to understand how they stole it is if you want to prevent it, you got to understand what they did and what to look for, so that they at least you're taking some of their chess pieces off the board for the next time. So.
And let me ask you a question. Yeah. When you say they, who are you talking about?
Well, that's an interesting question. I know some of the players that were at least complicit with the theft.
Okay.
Do I know who the person was that was moving the chess pieces around on a 5D okay. chessboard? Well, I think one of the key indicators of, or one of the main reasons we're asking for full forensic audit is to be able to trace okay. the chain of information. And you notice the most difficult piece of information to get are things like the Splunk logs and the router data, which would indicate where communications are yeah. happening behind the scenes.
Right, and we don't really have that.
So you don't, we don't have,
we
that,
don't have
yet.
That.
I mean,
okay.
if they did a true, treat it like a digital crime scene, we'd have that information,
yeah.
and we don't.
Right. Okay, so you're talking about the four different
components. Yep. And so in the book, I just frame it. I say, here's a theory of how you would go about stealing it.
So the first one
the first one is preparation phase. And the whole goal of that is to create and expand weaknesses in our election system. And they can do that via these ballot proposals, like no reason absentee voting. They can do it by seeding the voter registration file here in the state with a bunch of fraudulent voters.
But not removing people who shouldn't be on the rolls.
And we have a Michigan State Senator who's a former Secretary of State here, Ruth Johnson, who sent a letter to her colleagues saying, guys, there's over 800,000 ineligible voters that were on the voter rolls for that election. Mm-hmm. And that creates one heck of a slush fund for somebody that's going to do mail-in ballot fraud. And then something that not a lot of people talk about, but I'm pretty passionate about, is the idea of centralizing the management of elections. I mean, we operate best when we're decentralized.
Absolutely.
The whole purpose of the Electoral College by our founding fathers was to decentralize it. So if California goes off on the deep end and just allows everybody that has a pulse to vote, well, at least that's only their Electoral College votes. It's not the rest of ours.
Right, right.
And so they centralized the elections with things like electronic voting systems that were networked together. And when you do that, you drastically decrease the number of bad actors you need in order to execute a theft. And then they did things like water down our audit process for post-election so that it was just basically a recount.
Gosh. We don't even really have real audits in most states.
I know. And then, so there's a lot of other things, but gets back into the money. When you see the money that was injected, you see all the organizations that were working against election integrity going into the election. I mean, they had an organization called Protect the Results. It's a consortium of 148 liberal organizations dedicated to protecting the results months before the election actually occurred. So what results were they protecting? What did they know that we didn't know?
They weren't protecting in the event that Donald Trump was reelected.
Exactly. And you had the Transition Integrity Project and things like that, that, I mean, it was Republicans and Democrats involved in this. So I hate to say. So a lot of that was all preparatory, and it was all designed to weaken the integrity of the election system. So then that opened the door to phase two, which was, I call it the main attack phase, and that's just Chicago-style mail-in ballot fraud. If you've watched the documentary 2000 Mules, you'll get an indication of what's involved there. You essentially have little ballot factories, and you match voters from that puffed-up voter registration file with a bunch of fraudulent voters in there. And you match them to ballots and play eHarmony.com. And you know, Dr. Frank has gone off and identified that that was done with machine-based algorithm precision. And the only way to detect that is with canvassing activities. And that's what a lot of people have been doing all around the state of Michigan, out in Macomb County. I know Jackie Eubanks is going to be with us mm-hmm. here today. She was one of the first stalwarts in executing canvassing activities, and she identified a 17.6% anomaly rate in Macomb County, which is just one of 83 counties in Michigan, and indicates that there are as many as 87,000 or more fraudulent votes cast in the state. And just for reminders, it was 154,188 reported vote margin here in Michigan.
Well, let me just say something else. That one, we'll have a speak. She will be here at the summit. Heather Honey,
yeah.
who runs an organization, Verity Vote. And I don't know if you've seen or talked with her about her research into Michigan. They released the report on Pennsylvania, which shows that there are 121,000 more ballots that are cast, counted, included in the certified total than there were voters who showed up at the polls.
Yes. And it's a consistent theme. And there's this little, one of the FOIA requests that I submitted back in December that is still open with the Michigan Secretary of State is, I wanted a list of all 5,579,317 people that voted in the state of Michigan.
Is that not publicly available?
No.
Really?
I sent in a check for over $700 for my deposit back in March and still have not seen anything. And What it gets to is that our statewide voter registration database has been very volatile. Mm-hmm. You don't know, right? The people that are in there, I mean, depending on what day it is, just like you were talking about with Verity Voting, I can have an overvote situation of 104,000 or more voters because they don't have the people listed from the 2020 vote in this election. So it is, there's a lot of sloppiness. And what makes matters worse is that the Michigan Auditor General actually did a report, and usually when I was in the Senate, I respected their work. When I saw them coming out with, in just a couple months ago, they actually put out a report on the procedures in place to maintain the integrity of the qualified voter file, and they said everything was perfect, it was no problem, it was an effective way of managing the
system. Really?
And the funny thing about their report is that when they actually analyzed the number of voters in the 2020 election, they were shy by 45,455 from the actual, so the Auditor General got it wrong too. The official statement of votes was not the same number of voters that they were actually investigating. So it's a complete dereliction.
Well, you know, what I think is so interesting is when, you know, the left has started this whole narrative for 2022 is misinformation.
Yeah.
Misinformation. They're talking about when we ask questions and we want to know what's going on, and they're going to control misinformation about the elections. And my response to that is, all right, well, if there are 140 or 120,000 more ballots than voters in Pennsylvania, yeah, that's misinformation from,
yes,
the election officials.
Exactly.
They're the ones, the way to stop misinformation is, one, be transparent.
Yes, exactly.
Turn over the records, make everything public, make everything accountable. And number two, count the votes properly.
Yes.
Make everything
match.
It's
not complicated.
It's just not hard.
And there's an old adage in politics that if somebody's busy making false claims and making a fool out of himself, you just let them talk.
Right.
That's not what's happening right now.
No.
They're shutting us down, shutting down censorship, which is why it was necessary to get the book out here.
So
that mail-in ballot phase, that only works if you predict the voter turnout accurately, right? So, and they predicted a record turnout. Brookings Institution predicted a record turnout, 145 million voters. They were right that it was record turnout, but it was 160 million. So they undershot by over 10%, which means they had to go back to plan B, and that's what I call the backup attack.
And what was that?
And the backup attack is we have evidence that they did direct vote manipulation at the vote tally in the vote database. And
how did
do
they
that,
do that?
Well, there's a variety of mechanisms that are available, and you need to do the forensic analysis to understand how, but we already know the vulnerabilities are there due to information gathered through Mesa County, Colorado. And report number 3 in there in particular shows how there was direct manipulation of the election results database. They actually had two different databases in Mesa County, Colorado. One at the beginning, another one that was loaded with some of the ballots, some of the preferred ballots afterwards. So we know they do direct vote tally manipulation. We also know that the cumulative vote tallies on election night featured something called an Edison Zero.
A what?
An Edison Zero. So Edison Research provides the vote tally reports out to all the media circles. And what they were reporting out was, okay, at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever, they say there's 3.3 million votes cast, then it's 3.4 million at 4 o'clock. And then something strange happened in Michigan and happened at different times all across the country, is that cumulative vote tally went down to zero and then popped back up again. Now, to most people, that's like, it's just a glitch in the system.
Well, you can't have that many glitches in that many places.
Right, especially all across the board. So here's where I get a little geeky, but there's, you know what a digital controller is. We use it in our thermostats at home to control the set point of the temperature. You use it to control the speed of your car with your cruise control. Well, got to thinking about, well, that's indication of a special type of digital controller called a PID controller, that when you adjust the set point on a PID controller, it resets to zero the cumulative variable you're tracking and then continues on. Well, that was a signature. It's like a fingerprint of a digital controller. And I did some snooping into that. It turns out that there's a white paper back in 2010 presented by three professors from Guangdong University in China. It was presented at Wuhan, in Wuhan, China, of all places. And they talk about how to design a PID controller to optimize the election results. Now, me as an engineer, whenever I hear the word optimize, first of all, it's a red flag saying somebody's been doing this before because they didn't like the results they were getting, so they had to figure out a way to do it better, so they had to do an optimize. But then I started thinking, well, this is kind of concerning. So there's definitely intent for somebody to go off and manage election results digitally. And so And then we've got the election night results that show a signature of a reset that is indicative of this special type of digital controller. So in order to pull this off, though, in this backup attack phase, you need to change more than the vote tally, right? I always talk about, and Catherine Engelbrecht's one of the first person I talked about this with, and she bludgeoned this into my head, saying you got to focus in on chain of custody. So there's a concept of the election record chain of custody. So if you change the vote tally records, well, if the vote tally doesn't match with the number of ballots you got, well, that's a red flag right there, right?
Pennsylvania, yep. Michigan.
And if the ballot Arizona. Count doesn't match with the, what the poll books are saying on the number of ballots issued, that's an issue. So you got to keep all these in sync. They all got to sing the that's same right. sheet of music.
They
here.
Should reconcile. A ballot should be treated like a dollar.
Yeah.
And we balance our checkbooks. The bank, has to, they have to balance every night. I mean, we should balance every precinct. They should match.
Yeah,
it's exactly. not a hard concept.
No, it isn't. But a lot of people right now are saying, all you got to do is count the ballots.
No,
no, that's what they want you to think. That's an example of three-card Monty where they're right. saying, just watch the right hand. Meanwhile, it's the left hand that's doing all the damage. And what? So I talk about if you're going to modify the vote tally directly, you got to connect the dots between the vote tally bone and the ballot bone and the poll book bone and the overall qualified voter bone. So they all got to say the same sheet of music. So that phase two with the mail-in ballot stuffing, you can mail ballots from anywhere in the country. So we believe that we have evidence that indicates that that happened in all 83 counties in Michigan. But that backup attack phase, you needed friendlies on the ground to push your fake ballots into the system, to update your fake poll books into the system. And that's where what happened when I was here at the TCF Center kind of factors in. So that Gateway Pundit video where they show that van doing a 3:30 a.m. drop-off of ballots well after the polls were closed,
right.
that sounds a heck of a lot like they're trying to get well on their ballot count, doesn't it? And it would be nice to see what the actual chain of custody around that has never been provided.
So they've not provided any records showing the chain of custody.
No, just a story saying, oh, the clerk must have had it.
And they won't respond to open records requests or...
There's a lot of tedious activities around that. I've asked for ballot envelopes, which will help determine that, right. and I've got no response for that right. so far from the city of Detroit. And we requested ballots, so we could actually zero in on that from the city of Detroit. And they've rejected that request after initially agreeing to it. So there's a whole issue with the Freedom of Information Act stonewalling right. that's going on right now. So now we've seen that there's evidence of a vote tally change. There's evidence of ballots being inserted in the system. Well, now you got to worry about poll books. Well, this is where all of our poll challengers or meddling kids on the ground come into play, because at the Wayne County Board of Canvassers, when they initially pulled all the ballots and poll books in after the election into the Wayne County Board of Canvassers, our Board of Canvassers was noticing that these precincts were out of balance by as many as 600 votes. And just for reference purposes, in Michigan, you're limited to in precinct size to 2,999 voters. Typically, you got 50% voter turnout, you know, about 1,500 ballots cast. So when you're out of balance by 600 votes,
that's a pretty big problem.
That's a huge problem. And but something very interesting happened. The day before Wayne County Board of Canvassers was supposed to vote on certification of the election, this mysterious black box came in, and we had some alert poll challengers on the ground. They said, what's in that black box? And I go, oh, new poll books. New poll books, really? 13 days after the election?
After the election?
Yeah, so vote first, and we'll figure out if you're eligible afterwards. So 13 days after the election, and miraculously, after these new poll books got factored in, the maximum out of balance was 29. And so even with that, I just want to point out, Detroit continued its pattern of having out of balance precincts. 71% of the absentee voter precincts were out of balance.
In other words, there were more ballots than voters.
Or vice versa.
Okay.
Either way, it's just like you said, it's a general ledger, it's got a balance. So, this is an issue where something's just not right. And in Michigan, under state law, if you don't have a reason for an out of balance precinct, it's not subject to a recount. So it's just an invite to fraud. So that's kind of the buildup, if you will, in the first three attack phases. You have preparation, creating the weaknesses. The second phase is the main attack, where you just leverage the biggest weakness, which is the President Trump rightly said, it's mail-in ballot.
Yeah.
And then the third phase is, okay, we need a little bit of an oomph to get over the edge. And they did direct manipulation of the vote tally in friendly jurisdictions like Detroit. So the last phase is what we've been living through ever since then. It's the defense phase. And it's making sure that we don't overturn any of the fraud that they executed in the first three. So everything from censorship from big tech platforms, from in our court system where they're saying, sorry, you don't have standing. They never look at the evidence, but when they look at the evidence, we're there. And then they're deleting election records right now. I mean, I've got a copy of a memo. It's in the book in here. There's a memo from the Michigan Secretary of State's Office and Bureau of Elections directing clerks to delete election records prior to the 22-month period of protection under the
federal law.
Yeah, federal law. So it's pretty clear what they're up to. And
And then calling us the big lie, saying anytime, you know, it's the big lie, the big lie, the big lie.
Well, here's something that I address in this book that a lot of people haven't done. And first of all, I try to connect the dots between all these bits and pieces that are out there. So 2000 Mules talks about the ballot harvesting and stuff. I talk about that, but I also talk about how it fits in with the machines and why are the machines tying in. So then you can tie in some of the work that Mike Lindell has been zeroing in on. Then you can tie into the what we're all experiencing regarding censorship and poor Katherine Engelbrecht going on Fox News, not being able to say the words 2000 mules. How does that happen, right? How do we turn our discussion of election fraud into a game of catchphrase?
Yeah.
And so when you start getting an appreciation for something that in military parlance is called an influence operation, now you start seeing why things are the way they are. And you understand that we've been the victim of a huge influence operation, and that's why I call the title of the book the 2020 coup, because it's very clear this is not the way things are supposed to be done in America. And one of the best images of this being a coup is what our Capitol looked like in the wake of the election. I mean, when's the last time you remember seeing 25,000 troops with a fence surrounding the Capitol in the wake of the election?
Yeah.
Never in America.
Yeah.
And I got a unique perspective. I've been overseas. I've been in the Soviet Union when I worked on the space program. I was over there. I saw what communism's like. Don't want to go there.
Right.
I was in East Germany when they reunified. I was at Berlin Wall.
Oh, wow.
If I had $5 on me, I could have bought a T-72 tank at the Brandenburg Gate. I've seen what it's like to live on the other side, and right now America is heading down that same path, and I'll be darned if I'm going to let it go without a fight.
So what do you tell people, citizens, that they can do, particularly with regard to the voting system, software, electronic poll books? What can people do at their local election office or their state? What are the things that they could do?
Well, one of the things we're going to talk about tomorrow is holding them accountable to what they say they're doing to secure the elections around these electronic voting systems. So my background's in systems engineering. I used to deal a lot with specifications. So we are told that we have to trust our electronic voting systems because they've been certified. They all got that good housekeeping seal of approval.
But they might have gotten it 10 years ago.
Well, not only that, but when you do some digging into who's actually doing the certification,
it's the vendors.
Right. It's a quid pro quo environment here, where the former executive out of Dominion Voting Systems is one of the people responsible for testing and certification.
Right.
So this is a interesting little racket that's going on right now. And bottom line is, I encourage citizens to hold them accountable what they say. So if they say that they've been certified by the Election Assistance Commission, then push for their paperwork, their cert paperwork. It's all up online. So if you have an ESNS machine and your county's deployed ESNS version 6.2.2, well, you can go off and pull up the certification papers for that configuration, and then you can go to your clerk and say, is this a configuration that you have installed? Is this a configuration you purchased? And it gets pretty pedantic. Some of these systems, they'll have like 90 different software and hardware components associated with it.
That have never been certified.
Right. Well, they've been certified as a package per the EAC, but that's not necessarily the configuration that gets deployed.
So one certified, but that's not what's actually being used.
Yeah, there's a general pattern in general around what happened in the election.
And do you write about that in your book? Do you have those instructions?
I get into some of the instructions on machines specifically. I mean, some of the stuff I'm just evolving after the fact and putting into this that people can get access to on my website. But But I highlight there's issues with the certification process.
I think that is one of the things I will tell you. Even people who are not technology proficient,
yeah,
it's one of the things some citizens groups have been able to identify is to say, well, wait a minute. These haven't been certified since 2013.
You don't have to be a techie. You just got to be...
Well, you might need to be a techie to read those certification standards at the EAC
website.
It's
just about being pedantic and detail-oriented, which I'm not always very detail-oriented, but it's a case where if they said that these are the 90 components that make up that system, I want to see those 90 components in the installed configuration. Right. If I don't, how are you getting an exception on it? And I'll tell you, you can get very granular on it. Some of the differences on these pieces of equipment, I mean, we talk about software drivers, and many people when they're at their home and they're working on a PC, they say, hey, you need a new driver for this or whatever when they plug in a new device. Well, some of these drivers, if you have a version 1 on the driver for a scanner, it can turn that machine into a Wi-Fi hotspot. And if you have a version 1.2, it'll just be a regular dumb machine. So those driver configurations are important.
So let me ask you something. Let's say that we have a group of citizens working in Georgia.
Yeah.
And this is actually ongoing right now, where a week ago in early voting, the Secretary of, the electronic poll books went down.
Yeah.
And so all these counties, some election officials were saying, well, just sign this piece of paper. And so, it was just, it's a nightmare. And the explanation was, well, the Secretary of State's office performed an upgrade during the night and it wreaked havoc on the system in all the biggest counties. Well, what can citizens do? What are the questions that they should ask? What are you doing, and would you be available? Are you doing something to create kind of a hotline for people around the country to be able to get some technology, proficient people who could call in and you could help them say, check this, check that?
Well, right now, I'm not funded by George Soros.
No, I know.
Bill Gates or anybody like that, so I'm one guy putting out information.
But I'm wondering if you think that if we created something like that, might that be helpful? Because I want to be able to help.
We need a center of excellence, essentially, with that data that allows them to say, hey, I'm told I got ES&S version 6.2.2 over here. What are the components of that? What's my CAN checklist as I walk into that I can just go in and say, check, we got that, check, check, check. And building those checklists would be very useful. And that's what I encourage people to do. It's kind of like a book audit, if you will.
Yeah.
And then you see whether or not they actually did what they said they do and do a field audit.
Well, I think that's the kind of thing that we probably need to do. I get this question all the time, and I always say to people, I'm old, I can barely work my iPhone, so I'm not the person. So we included nothing in our election contest in Georgia. We included nothing about the machines because we had no money, no expertise, no knowledge. But people are asking these questions, and just the situation last week in Georgia is a reminder. They don't have a backup plan. They didn't have a backup plan. But I think that we need to have a central place where people can go and ask questions. And I have to say, you know, Mike Lindell's a great American patriot in my view, but I have to tell you, I get very frustrated with him because I watched for the big reveal.
I know.
And there was no big reveal.
I was with him on the red team.
Well, there was no big reveal. And so it hurt the credibility of everybody who is asking these questions. And so what we're trying to do is create something that is credible, that doesn't have the, you know.
But that chapter isn't over yet. But I do agree with one thing. The majority of the fraud, the vast majority is in that main attack phase, 90% of
that's
the fraud.
Right. That's
and
right.
So if you're focused in on cleaning up the voter rolls, you're going to be...
and stopping the...
You're taking away a major, you're taking away the queen from their chessboard here.
Right.
All right? The stuff with the electronic voting machines is maybe in the 10% margin. So for me, it's important. It got them over the top, but it's also a case where you need to address it, because even though that may have only been directly responsible for about 10%, it actually gave you the intel you needed for the other 90%.
Yeah.
So it's that's something that we need to go off and address, I think. So I think there's plenty of targets of opportunity.
Yes,
and so
are.
Everybody, you know, many parts, one body. So the idea is to find out whatever your core skill set is, and if you just like calling people on the phone, call on the phones, and if you like knocking on doors and saying hi to people, canvassing will be ideal for you. If you like delving into system specifications and playing around with hardware and software specs, then there's another opportunity for you. But we want to get everybody.
That's how I feel about it. And particularly, you know, and we have our Citizen's Guide to Building Election Integrity Infrastructure is to hopefully create task forces in every county, every local area in America to have oversight. But we've got seven different lanes, and one of those is the voting systems. Yeah. One of them is getting knee deep in absentee ballots, you know, the voter rolls. It is all these things, and there's something for everybody to do. And we try to write that all out, and we'll be handing out that. That's what we'll be teaching at our summit. That's what we teach.
In the book, I actually break things out into different audiences. So there's a whole section on citizens, and we address some of the stuff we've just been talking about. There's also a section for legislators, a section for law enforcement, a section
That's a really good point. Election officials.
Judges, and then election officials, not just elected officials, but election officials. And so a lot of these election officials could be doing these book audits, making sure that they're in sync with the certified versions as well. Instead, they're just kind of giving the song and dance from a lot of these vendors saying, trust me, it's in there. We got this here, look at the seal. It's in the it's on the seal. Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of them don't know what they don't know.
Right.
I mean, we've got, here's just one quick example of what a lot of election officials don't know. The DS200 machine actually has an embedded Telit Systems 4G wireless modem sitting on the motherboard. And the only way you can tell that it's got that modem embedded on there is if you open up the chassis, and then you're smart enough to know what a 4G wireless chipset
looks like
on a motherboard. But if you don't know that, what clerk in their right mind would even think about opening up the hood to see that? You don't know that. So there's a big vulnerability, and part of the issue with these electronic voting systems is that you don't know what you don't know in many cases. Mm-hmm. And also, keep in mind, when you're using an electronic voting system, it's not subject to independent oversight. So you talk about the importance of transparency. That is
very
the least transparent aspect of our elections right now, and we hand off the most important parts of our election process, like vote tally. That's what people stay up for till 3 o'clock in the morning to watch. We hand that off to a third party and they just say, trust me.
Well, we need to think of the ways, and I'm sure your book has some suggestions for how to make that more transparent.
We do our best,
We do our best. So you have another book, Draining the Swamp, Wrestling Gators. Tell us, is that about your experience as an elected official?
Yes, that was my attempt to go off and capture 8 years of service in the Michigan Senate and talk about how government really works. So if you're really frustrated by why your elected officials behave the way that they do, I mean,
read wrestling alligators.
I actually get into those process diagrams that the liberals like, right? And I map out how a bill becomes a law in much more detail than you'll see in Schoolhouse Rock videos.
Yeah, that's true. So the 2020 coup, what happened, what we can do, Patrick Colbeck, and you're going to help us create a center where people can call and have questions and get those answered, because we need a place, a trusted place where people can get answers in real time. As we're seeing these things in the primaries, we know what we're up against.
Absolutely, and the more people that get engaged, the better, because many hands make light work, and there's a lot of work to go. We've been kind of asleep at the wheel for a few decades, but I think we got our wake-up call.
I think
we
do.
And for the first time in a long time, I think we finally had the wind at our back.
Yeah.
2,000 mules helped pierce that veil of censorship to a certain degree. I'm hoping this book will be the 1-2 punch with it, and then Mike Lindell and Laura Logan have a video coming out on Tina Peters in Mesa County, Colorado, that's going to talk about the seedier side of this in a very personal, emotional way because of what they did to Tina Peters it's a tragic story. So
it is. Well, Pat, thank you for all that you do and for all you do for our country and helping us try to save our elections.
Yeah, thanks.
And try to hopefully make some of this understandable to those of us who don't have a technology background.
Well, there's plenty of room for the meddling kids, right?
Okay,
so there's
that's
a
right.
lot of different skill sets. Not everybody's a Shaggy or Scooby, and they all got different roles to play.
That's great. Well, thank you for joining us, and thank you for joining us. Hope you will share this podcast with your friends. Subscribe to the podcast. Join the Election Integrity Network. Subscribe. Get our emails. Go to our website, whoscounting.us. We have lots of information. We have resources. Got our Citizen's Guide to Building Election Integrity Infrastructure is there. Download it. Get some friends around the kitchen table and say, what can we do in our area to save our elections? So with that, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, and to become part of the Election Integrity Network.